So before we came to New Hope, our family lived in Richmond, Virginia. In the mid-80s, there was a story that broke in the Richmond Times-Dispatch. There was a guy, Bruce, he was one of a handful of like the top finance experts and whiz guys in Richmond. Extremely successful, well-respected nationally. And the story came out as he was missing. Hadn't told his partners, his clients, his staff. I mean, he just disappeared. And there was a huge hunt out to find Bruce. 2 weeks later, they discovered him. He was in the Caribbean on his yacht. He had just completely checked out. And the word on the street was that he had snapped. And there's a lot of pressure in the stocks, and all that kind of world has got tons of pressure with it. And even though he was extremely successful, they thought, well, it's just kind of caught up with him. Truth is, he hadn't snapped. He had just hit a crisis point in his life. His parents were both drug addicts in California, and so when he was born, they put him up for adoption, and so a couple on the Eastern Shore of Virginia adopted him. He had all kinds of privileges and opportunities he would have never had before, and he took advantage of them, and he got his education. He did all the things that he was told would bring you success, and at, you know, in his mid-30s, early 40s, this guy was a real success. All the metrics that we'd use, I mean, he had them. He had everything you could imagine materially and all that. Very popular and well-known. But it just wasn't working. I've achieved everything I was supposed to. This was supposed to be the great life. And it was anything but that to him. He just felt empty. And so he had taken off, and when he came back, he sold all of his recreational stuff, and he had tons of stuff. And he went on this search. He was trying to figure out, so what's going on? Why I have this hole in me that I just can't fill? He continued to believe he was still this unwanted drug addict's offspring. And so he went on. Part of what he did is he went back to the hometown on Eastern Shore where he'd grown up, and he went to, the pastor was still at the church that he had gone to as a kid. He had never really bought into the Christian stuff, but he was just thinking, maybe this guy will have some answers, and he showed up in the pastor's office, had an appointment with him, and when he got in there, introduced himself, and as soon as the pastor found out who Bruce was, the whole rest of their conversation was about finances and how he could help the church and how he could help them with their investments and all this kind of stuff. And Bruce left there just thinking, you know, there's no answers here for me. I ended up meeting him because someone at the church I was working at really urged him to not give up on God. And we ended up becoming friends, and just hearing his story, it's pretty heartbreaking because on the surface, he had everything that everybody wanted, everything everybody thought, this is the way success looks like. And inside, it just wasn't there. And the fact that he had tried a church and didn't get any help, in fact, he was really mishandled horribly. One of the reasons we're doing this series. Over the years, the church has proven itself to be the absolute best and the absolute worst advertising for the Christian faith. There are some times when followers of Jesus and the church have done some amazing things where it's, you look at the abolition of slavery would be one, or caring for the orphans, and there's so many things that have happened worldwide, but then there are also these, just like my friend Bruce, or there's opportunism, or there's just some stuff done that is just so inexcusable. So we wanted to do this series. I'm going to give you a quick review of what we looked at last week, and if you missed, I hope you'll go online or find some way to look at it. But we looked at four ways the church typically gets it wrong, not always, but can get it wrong, and then what we could do right. And then we're gonna finish this up with something else, a priority that we have today. What we looked at are there are four ways the church has earned a reputation of being either irrelevant or worse. The first thing is this image of where the church tends to be judging others rather than loving others. Regularly, when you interview people and they talk about the church in negative ways, this comes up. It's just like our tendency, if we're not careful, is to critique those other people. All of us have a list of other people. We, you know, may not broadcast it, all some of us do. That'll be point number two. But this idea of judging and critiquing and pointing out their faults and failures and all this kind of stuff, and we do that comfortably at a distance. The problem with that is that's exactly the opposite of what Jesus asked us to do as his church. Rather than judging people, he said, I want you to love them. I want you to get close enough to care, not keep your distance so you can judge and stereotype and caricature people. So we need to learn how to do this loving thing and get away from the judging. The thing about judging, it leads to this second thing we looked at last week, is there's a tendency among church folks to rant about and to others rather than to listen to and understand them. And make no mistake about it, we have critiquing and judging and ranting and all that's not new. It's just that we have vehicles now that allow it to happen more immediately and with a broader audience. So some of you could tweet something right now and it can be heard literally across the globe. And the thing about this ranting, it takes judgment and critiquing and it lends a voice to it. Again, it does so much harm. I've also noticed this. I watch this too. Sometimes some of the people that rant the most in judgment about other people, they're hoping to gain respect by being disrespectful of other people. It's foolish. And you're not gaining respect. You might intimidate people. You might get an audience. People might laugh. But you're not really, again, it's the opposite of what Jesus asked us to do, which is love and to listen and understand people. The third thing we looked at is the church has a reputation, and this has gone on since day one, of acting hypocritically rather than humbly. And this hypocrisy, it's a universal criticism that's born of pretending to be something that you're not. And again, if you took all the hypocrites out of the church, turn out the light, well, no one can even turn the lights. There'd be no one around to do it. It's just when you act like you're not hypocritical is the problem. And so one thing that happens is along the way, you have these huge scandals that come up where things have been covered up. It should have been dealt with earlier, but you've got, whether it's financial, it could be other kind of abuse that's taken place. It's been covered up. Finally, it's exposed, and it's horrible. It's terrible, but it's nowhere. It could have been so much, it could have been handled so much better earlier with some honesty and humility and a willingness to be genuine. But our tendency is to not do that. And a watching world says, who needs that? If you're not willing to own your stuff, why do you think I should trust you with mine? If you're not willing to admit that you have issues individually or organizationally, then why in the world would I trust you? And the fourth one we looked at is this idea of churches have been known over times to kind of do this and figure out where the political winds are going. And so what they do is they learn to accommodate things God says is wrong rather than courageously representing him and his truth. The idea is I need to understand what does God say is right and good? And if that makes me counterculture, that's okay. There's a way to handle that, but I need to be willing to, instead of just adopting what's going on around me in order to be cool or accepted. People see through that kind of stuff. I got an email from a friend this week that had a concern about this particular statement. Not the statement itself, but what it could lead to. And it was about this idea of courageously representing the truth. Some people use that as a cover for a judgmental attitude toward others and holding on to their own personal truth and parading that as if it was God somehow. That's why we started these four off with this not judging but learning to love people. There is only one judge. We're all going to stand before him one day. We'll give an account of our life. And the only way anyone will ever be right with him is if they accept the gift that he gave in sending us Jesus. It's not because I'm better than anybody else or I've somehow got a handle on the truth better. It's, did I know his son? We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But you and I, we have never been called to judge other people. We are not the judge. We actually been told to be witnesses about the judge's kindness and his mercy and the truth that he has, but not for us to go around condemning other people and judging them. In fact, one of the crazy things to me, and I'll get off my soapbox, is how often church people expect non-Christians to act like they're following Jesus. That doesn't make any sense. But we tend to do that because we feel like we have the moral high ground somehow, and I'm so much better, and I'm so much smarter, and these people, those people, again, we go back to the judging rather than loving. We've got to figure out how to do better. And it's on us to do that. There are a lot of important things that Jesus' church should be involved in. There are a lot of things that we ought to be focusing our energy and efforts on. I mean, some of us, we look at church and we're saying, oh, I need to go somewhere I can worship, where I get good teaching, where I can get connected to other people. All that's really, really good. We ought to be involved in serving outside of our church and helping people as much as we possibly can. That's really important. And then these things that we looked at last week, we need to keep those at bay. We need to, you know, love and listen and understand and all this kind of stuff. And then we need to be actively involved in things that matter from God's perspective. And, you know, we need to be helping the poor. You don't have to be wealthy to do that. You just need to have a little bit more than someone else does. And we need to be helping the disadvantaged. We did this bike drive. We raised, I don't know, we got like 200 bikes that came. And these are going to be shipped to Nicaragua, and it's going to be helping provide jobs and training, and it's going to be providing transportation, and it's going to be a huge help. We need to be doing things like this. This is what Jesus' church ought to be about, is helping those that are disadvantaged. We need to help those that are in need of food, malnourishment, both here and abroad, where people are literally starving to death because they don't have enough food. We need to be involved in these kind of things. We need to be offering counseling and support for people that are struggling, individuals and families that are going through really hard times, and help them understand that someone cares. That's how we're doing our listening. We point them to what is true, what does God say, and try to help them walk through it, come alongside them. We need to help people that are struggling with issues that are beyond their personal control on their own. I'm wearing a Celebrate Recovery shirt, and we want to help people that have got habits in their life that have overtaken them, or they've got some hurts that have dominated their thinking and how they operate, or things that have been holding them back for a long time, all kinds of things. And we want to come alongside and help and do everything we can to help them find hope and freedom. There are so many things the church should be involved in, and we need to be. I'm talking about Big C Church throughout the world. But there is one thing that is essential. One thing that is essential that should always be our priority, and we should never, ever let this escape our vision. And if we're not careful, what happens is it gets replaced. We begin seeing ourselves as a social agency or a relief group. There is a distinctive in the church that we cannot afford to lose. And it's one that, I mean, there are a lot of organizations that do a lot of good. But there is one specific thing that the church has been given that is distinct for us. And if we lose that, then it really is kind of why bother with the church. There's a passage in the New Testament that explains this really well. This is in Romans 1. It says, "For I have a great sense of obligation to people in both the civilized world and the rest of the world, to the educated and uneducated alike," and you can come up with every group you want to. "For I'm not ashamed of this good news about Christ. It's the power of God at work, saving people, saving everyone who believes, the Jew first and also the Gentile. This good news tells us how God makes us right in his sight. We do. There are a lot of things we need to be involved in as Jesus Church. We need to be his hands and feet making a difference in the world. But this priority, this obligation we have is to tell people that there's a God that loves them, wants a relationship with them, and has gone to great lengths for them to have it. We meet physical needs and all that to help people, but there's something much bigger than that they need to know too. And this goes beyond social status or economy, education, racial background. It's everyone on planet Earth was created in God's image. They are equally created in his image and equally loved by him. And he wants them to know that. He wants them to come into a relationship with him. We get to tell people that. 1 Corinthians 9 says, yes, I try to find common ground with everyone, doing everything I can to save some. It doesn't say I try to find common ground with people that are kind of like me, but with everyone. And it's not that I save anybody, it's just I get to be God's partner in this process of bringing people to an understanding and a point where they make a commitment to follow him too. And that means that everything we do should be designed to where it allows us to connect with other people and engage with them and be involved in their lives. We come into their sphere, not waiting for them to come into ours. And we do everything we can, and all the good things we do, all of them having this desire that there be a point where we get to tell them about the why behind it and especially the who behind it. We do everything we can to earn the right to be able to talk to people about this God that loves us and loves them. I want you to think about that and listen to this verse in 1 Peter 3. It says, but in your heart set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. What I love about this is it says, always be prepared to give an answer when someone asks you why. The idea here is that somehow I'm living in such a way that would create some questions in people's minds. And when we do these acts of service and kindness, when we're reaching out and getting involved in other people's world, rather than judging them, we're loving them and we're finding ways to get engaged, there'll be a time, a natural thing at some point would be, why are you doing this? Why would you spend your time, your money? Why would you be involved with all this? And to be able to answer that in an honest, kind of compelling way. Too many times what I think we do, we think if we can yell at people long enough, they'll get it. I've never seen two people arguing and yelling and one of them say, oh, whoa, you're right. Ha, thanks for sharing. But you catch people off guard when you do something kind for them, when you do something that's counterintuitive. There are ways that we get to earn the right to talk to people. And here's some ways that people might say, someone might say, why do you care about me? Why do you accept me? And see, the answer can always be here. Let me tell you about the one that cared about me and accepted me. Why are you willing to forgive me? Why do you keep praying for me? Why are you serving me? I've done nothing for you. Why have you not given up on me? See, when we are living this way, we earn the right to tell them about Jesus. The reason a lot of times people aren't asking the question is they're not really seeing anything very intriguing or very compelling or very attractive. Jesus' church, we, those of us that are his followers, we've been given a unique priority. And we need to do everything we can. We need to be on top of how we relate to others, so they might see something about Jesus in our life through our sacrifice and our service. They would say, I want to know more about this God that you follow, this God that you serve. So what I'd like to do, and I want to finish with this, is we need to work really hard to be living in a way where people are going to want to know more, but then we need to be able to answer them when they ask. And some of you right now, I could get you to get sweaty palms immediately if I said, we're just going to go around and ask you, just randomly, Take 3 minutes and tell me how you would tell someone who Jesus is, why he came, and how they could have a relationship with him. And in your mind, this is what's going on in a lot of your thought bubbles. Oh, that's why we hired you. But I'm not with your friends. I'm not with the people watching your life. All of us need to understand, what is this good news that we talk about? What does it look? I mean, how? Come on, let's be honest about it. How do you explain that? And if it's got to be so complicated that you've got to be a PhD to explain it, then you probably don't know it very well. I'm going to show you one way to do it. I'm not busting anybody. I'm just saying we ought to be, we, as a church, we need to be living in a way where people are going to want to know why and the who behind our lives. We ought to be intriguing. And there ought to be something in our life that when people see us, it defies explanation. A lot of times what happens is we live just like everyone else does. And it's not compelling. We make self-centered choices, or we do things, well, of course, that's what. But when we do something that's not like everybody else, and we do it in a humble, loving, understanding kind of way, then people say, I need to know more about this. So I'll show you, this is a simple way. It's not the only way, but this is an easy way, just using three circles. You can start a conversation. This is pretty an easy one. To tell people we live in a broken world, duh. Can't even do the Kentucky Derby without there being controversy. I mean, there's all kind of things that go on in our world that is broken. You see what atrocities people do to each other. You see things that are, I mean, it doesn't take long to see, man, the world is really pretty screwed up. At the same time, in the brokenness, there's still beauty in the world too. You see horrible things that people can do to each other, and you see acts of heroism, whether it's our military or EMS or police, or you see just random citizens running in to help somebody at their own risk. I mean, there's in the midst of brokenness, there's beauty. There's natural beauty. Like if you've ever been to Sri Lanka, it's an island off, and it's beautiful. I mean, there's got mountains, it's got nature. People go there for vacations and stuff. It's a beautiful place. God created this world with a really good design. I'm not going to get into the science stuff, but it's unique in that it can sustain life. There's all kind of beauty in it. Then it's not just the beautiful in nature, but there are things about you and me. We were created in His image. There's a dignity and a beauty to that. But there's also brokenness in all of it, too. That same Sri Lanka. Our daughter-in-law was there 2 weeks ago in Colombo and was staying in a hotel. And we understand that one of the guys with the backpack walked in there, but there weren't enough people there. So he walks 100 yards across the street and blows himself up in a restaurant where people are eating. This beautiful place where people go to vacation and have fun. A picture of brokenness and horror. We got these two things that go on. The Bible explains that the world is, there's beauty by design and it's broken. And how do you explain that? And what the Bible says is this, is that God created things good, but He also allowed us to have this capacity to do whatever we want. Not without consequences, but we do whatever we want, and that's sin. Sin is when I do what I want to because I just want to. And I know people will say, well, you know, I think that's kind of antique. No, it's not. If you walk back in our nursery right now, you look at the 14 to 16-month-old babies, you know what the first two words that come out of a kid's mouth? Yeah, it starts with an M. Two words. My, or three. My, me, and mine. Not mommy, not daddy. You can come up with whatever you want. There's a self-centered thing. I want things my way. I want it the way I want it now. And the problem is there are all kind of consequences when I'm violating this good design that God had and how He wants us to live, and I end up in this brokenness because of choices that I and you and all of us have made. And in this, it creates this distance between us and God. And we have to live with the consequences of that. And what happens is we try to figure out, so what do I do with this? I'm going to try to fix this brokenness. And you can do like my friend Bruce did, and you can say, well, if I can just hit the pinnacle of success, I've got everything the world says that makes me successful. The problem is the fixes don't work eventually. You might say, well, I just get I need new friends. And a lot of you really do need new friends, but that's not going to work because you're still going to be there. I'll get a new family. The one I've got's old, and I've gotten kind of tired of them. So some of you are going on your second, third, fourth family. You're still trying to find the right one to fix it. Maybe if I just have some way where I've got power over my life, that's what I need, or power over other people. I mean, there's tons of ways we try to fix it, but it doesn't work because brokenness can't fix brokenness. Broken things don't heal themselves. And so what you do is that we understand, the Bible answers this, God created things good, we've done our own screw up in that by wanting to go our own way, and now it's broken, and this we're living with the consequences of the brokenness. We still see some beauty, but the brokenness is there, and all of our fixes ultimately will not work. What do? And that's where the good news comes in. The bad news is this. Me and this world and all of us are broken. But there's some good news over here. And that's that God didn't abandon us. By right, he could have just looked at what we've done and he could at any point just say, well, just go to hell. You have destroyed what I've created. You've made a mockery of it. But he didn't do that. His love compelled him to do something for us. And that's when we understand who Jesus is and why he came and what he did. His sacrifice, he came to rescue you and me from what we deserved. To give us the capacity to have a brand new life, to be adopted into his family. My friend Bruce, he understood, when he heard this, it stunned him. Because he realized there's a God that loves me. In spite of the fact that I see myself as worthless and I'm just this drug addict's baby. He said, there's a God that loves me. And even though, and he knew all the kind of stuff he had done too. Prices that he paid to get the success he had. And all it takes here, I can't fix myself, but if I humbly surrender to Jesus, admitting my need, asking for his help. Bible says God accepts me into his family. Sin forgiven, past forgotten, a brand new trajectory now and forever. And what happens is Jesus becomes my rescuer and my restorer. He rescues me from the brokenness that I've lost my life in. And now he restores me to live this brand new life. And I'm going to be restored to where I begin to understand God's design, what his intention is. And I begin to wrap my life around those truths that God said, this is how I created you to begin with. This is how relationships are to operate. This is what love looks like. This is what forgiveness looks like. And this is what his intent is. And so that I'm now restored. I'm learning to live this new life. And now I have a brand new purpose. And that purpose is I get to tell others this good news. I don't get to come along and judge them because I was a part of this mess myself. But I get to tell them about this God that loves us and God that did everything. He sent his son to come take our place so we could have freedom and hope and forgiveness. And not be distant from him, but to be close to him. Now and forever. This is the purpose the church exists for. This is the good news. That God loved us, and in spite of what we've done, if we will humbly surrender to him, he will accept us as we are, and then he will work to help change us from the inside out. And as the world, people around us, our coworkers, neighbors, family, friends, as they see God making these changes in us, it's going to cause them to say, what's going on? Tell me about it. our changed lives, and our serving and caring about others opens the door for us to be able to tell them. This is a unique opportunity we have as a church. Anything less than this is way beneath our privilege and our responsibility. So just to close, if you have been hurt, if you're here, if you're watching, or if you're listening later this week, if you have been hurt by this church or any other one, you've seen the hypocrisy or the judgment, in ways that you've been treated horribly and misunderstood, or I am deeply sorry. But please don't write off Jesus because his people have gotten it wrong. If you go to I'm going to mention medical profession just as an illustration. If I go to a doctor and they botch surgery, it would not make a lot of sense for me to write off all medical help. I wouldn't go back to that one. The church is the same way. My friend Bruce made a poor choice where he went, and he was treated horribly with that church. That's going to happen. But don't give up on Jesus as a result. I pray you would look and you get to know him as he really is. Second thing, those of us that have accepted Jesus, my priority and yours, and what we need to wrap our lives around, is helping people to understand this good news. Not get so busy in doing other stuff and building our own life and our own happiness and success and all that kind of stuff. What we need to do is realize I've been given the unique opportunity to help people see something about Jesus in me and to be able to tell them about him. I need to live in such a way where they would want to, that they see something distinctive Christ-like in me, or something growing Christ-like, and then I need to be able to communicate them, whether it's using an illustration like this or another. I need to find a way to be able to do it. Because once I know how to do this, it's going to take some of the fear out. I'll be more apt to maybe engage people because I'm not going to be afraid that they might ask me something I couldn't answer. When you leave today, there's a take-home sheet outside of each of the doors, it'll help you go further with this. It won't take you a long time. Well, it'll take you the rest of your life. It's simple to think about, but it's going to be one of those things that this should be our obligation, is to show and tell this good news. Individually, in our family, our small groups, our church, this is what we're about. And if you're a follower of Jesus, there is no opt-out clause in this. And just don't buy into it. It's something I have to do. I get to because of what he's done for me. Let's pray. God, forgive us when we have gotten so caught up in ourselves, our own agenda, our own big ideas, that we've somehow justified sliding away from what you say is absolutely essential. Those of us that know you, we have been given a brand new life, and that life is to be devoted to serving. Serving you and serving others in hopes that they will get to know you. God, some of us are toying with things and we've gotten so caught up in our own agenda that we've really drowned you out. And I pray that you would help us to look in the mirror and decide that we're going to put you first before anything else in our own lives. I pray that each of us here or listening, us corporately at New Hope, that we'll be a church that people will see in us something that would cause them to want to know why. And then we get to tell them about you. I ask that you protect us from being judgmental or so criticizing of others that we can't see them except for the stereotype. Help us to learn to listen and take initiative to get to know people on their own turf, in their own terms. Help us to hold the truth honorably and allow it to seep into our lives, but also that where we love without any restrictions. God, please help us be a church you'll be proud of, individually and collectively. In Christ's name, amen.